This is Kat's podcast, episode number 46. It's the second part of the conversation with Tani Taylor, yoga teacher and co-creator of the Australian company Superfeast. Now, if you haven't yet listened to the first part, which is episode number 45, hop back, do so. And if you have, well then, enjoy the second part of our conversation. Now, coming back to the beginning of the story, you said you took this reishi and the hishu wu. So if there are like women listening now, and I'm sure there are a few who are dealing with painful periods or PMS, What would be the topic that you recommend? Can you say for you it was the reishi or the hishu wu, or is it super individual?
Well, yes and no. So reishi and hishu wu are, so I've spoken about reishi being a shen tonic, a heart tonic, but it's also a liver tonic. And I spoke about the emotions and the liver, and I really can't emphasize enough that our emotional state especially impacts the liver. So in Chinese medicine, every organ, of which there are five yin organs, every organ has a responsibility to help us digest or process certain emotions. So the heart, it's joy, compassion, but also hate. So if we're, you know, really, really like abhor something, that can affect the heart in Chinese medicine. In the spleen, it's to do with our thinking. So in general, any kind of any kind of process of thinking and digesting information and assimilating it is related to the spleen, but also our ability to empathize and sympathize with one another. So it's kind of this like really connecting like energy. So that's a big one for women. I'll come back to that in a minute. The kidneys is more around fear and fright and also wisdom. So, you know, it's this ability to understand the fear that might motivate us and actually alchemize that into a wise path of action instead of just a reaction. The liver is about frustration, anger, irritation, and also about benevolence, kindness, and kind of similarly to the heart, like compassion, but if the heart's like the really big and all-encompassing compassion, the liver's a little bit more on that personal level of like, you know, I can actually have the capacity to be kind to you because I'm calm within myself. And then the lung, which a lot to do with grief and sadness, but also courage. And so sometimes, you know, we might have to face something really difficult or really hard in our lives, like the loss of, whether it's a death or a relationship breakup or something like that. But the courage to keep going and to actually, again, like use the grief to start to become more vulnerable and more like open to life instead of shut off from it. Like that's kind of the real work of the lungs. And so when we're talking menstrual issues, I really personally like to look at the liver, the spleen, and the kidneys. The heart rules the blood, and so it's very important. But the way it's set up in Chinese medicine is the heart is at the peak of, like, it's kind of the last place where the information goes, and all these other organs are really doing the work first. So that's really to protect the heart. The heart's considered the most important organ, the most vital organ, and it has a lot of protection energetically and kind of physically in Chinese medicine. So I always think liver, spleen, kidneys. Like, again, there's a variance of sometimes other things can be going on, but that's typically the sort of triad. So what I was taking, which is really interesting, was reishi, which is a liver tonic. And, you know, I don't really think of it as a spleen tonic, though there are a few, I've seen it referenced a couple of times. And then I was taking hishu wu, which is a yin jing tonic, a kidney tonic, right? And it's also a liver tonic. So I was basically taking two liver tonics, and then the heart and the kidneys were supported as well.
All right.
And so when I started to understand this, I was like, so what I was really doing was ramping up the support for my kidneys, which at that point in my life, I owned two yoga studios. I was teaching up to 24 classes a week at like the worst, usually around 16 to 18, which is still a lot if you've been a yoga teacher. And I was getting up around 4 to 5 a.m. to practice
Wow.
and going to bed, usually quite late, sometimes having a nap in the day. I mean, anyone with a brain is like, that is exhausting, you know. I didn't have, or I had a car, but I didn't drive it very often. I rode my bike everywhere. So I was very, very, very active. And I was mostly practicing a mix of vinyasa and yin at the time. So and teaching those two styles as well. So I was not, you know, yin was probably the most rest I got in my entire week, but I was very active. And, you know, the styles of yoga I was teaching and that were popular were quite dynamic vinyasa practices, you know, handstands and things that were, you know, big on the body. And on top of that, I wasn't, you know, I was eating kind of pretty randomly because I was like in and out of classes. And again, you know, like you're not going to go and eat a massive meal and teach a yoga class. It feels terrible in your body. So you usually have a smoothie or something kind of light. So I could go the better part of a day without eating a substantial meal.
Yeah, that really depletes you over the long run, eh?
Exactly. Yeah. And so this had been going on, you know, for a period of a few years. And, you know, and then I'd had a really big breakup about 2 years before with someone I'd been with for a decade. So I was grieving and processing a lot of that as well. And so the skin in Chinese medicine is connected to the lungs. And obviously, if we're grieving, we're really going to have weak lungs because the energy of the lungs isn't going to be flowing well. And I wasn't handling my grief. I was squashing my grief and pretending it wasn't there because I was the breaker-upper. So I didn't feel like I had the right to be sad when this person was really sad. So, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on for me on top of coming off the pill, you know, making some pretty dramatic changes to like my lifestyle and my health as well. It's starting to really, like I said, do a lot of cleansing and a lot of big, you know, I was doing liver flushes regularly and all of this stuff. So I was mobilizing a lot in my body. And what I felt happened when I took the herbs was it sort of brought everything into alignment and kind of reintegrated all of these pieces that were quite like separate and supported this emotional, because a lot of this, right, was driven by fear. Like if I'm really honest, I was afraid that if I didn't push myself really hard and be the best teacher I could be and run these studios and like really, you know, make a big splash that I was going to lose everything. I was going to have no income. I was going to have no business. You know, like there's a real undercurrent of fear driving what looked like probably like good business behavior and, you know, but it wasn't an authentic expression of like my passion. There was like a real sense of like, got to keep everything moving, you know? And then similarly with the liver, like a lot of unprocessed emotional stuff, a lot of, you know, stagnant kind of energy around emotions from basically my life, you know, like it was a big thing. And so the working with the Reishi, working with the Heshi Wu, I felt some of that stuff come up, you know. I was doing, like I said, I was meditating a lot at that point as well. And so I would have a lot of really big cathartic processes where I would really see myself and I would see what I was doing. And I was, you know, kind of sometimes like, oh my God, I don't really want to see this stuff. Like it was a lot sometimes. And, you know, and it led to a very big change. Like I left my businesses, I moved to Byron, I met, you know, I ended up with my husband. Like things changed so dramatically for me over those couple of years. But there was a lot of, you know, and I'm not saying everyone listening needs to do that, but I was lying to myself in a lot of ways about what I needed my lifestyle to look like. I was kind of living someone else's, you know, like dream, like it was you know, it's a great experience. And I never want to look back on that part of my life and say it was bad. It wasn't, it was super fun. Yeah. And I felt, you know, really proud of what I achieved as well, but it wasn't a good fit for my body, my constitution, what I needed. And especially for that season of my life where I did want to start moving toward having children. And I was thinking about, well, what does it mean to start a family from a nourished place instead of from a depleted place, you know? And so that kind of kidney liver theme was really big for me. And then I probably, so the next order I did, how I said I put in like a $500 order, I got this herb called lion's mane, which I didn't know a heap about at the time, beyond that it was a mushroom. But I knew it was kind of good for, you know, like the brain and all that kind of stuff. But I kind of just got it because it, you know, was in the package, like there was a couple of things he had and thought I'll just try this one. And I got another one called Shago, which lion's mane's not one I take a lot personally. It's, again, not one I'm super drawn to, but Shago is. I really love Shago. And again, Shago is quite a strong Jing kind of kidney supporting tonic, but also both of these are quite, you know, they support the spleen as well. And that was like that digestive piece for me was, you know, I've thought I couldn't eat gluten. Like there was a lot of stuff going on for me with my digestion that I thought was like what in Western medicine or in naturopathy would be like allergies or intolerances and that kind of thing. So I was really struggling with, you know, I thought there were lots of things I couldn't eat at that point. And I remember talking to Mason about it and he said to me, well, I was like, oh, it's like, you know, this thing where my body just like attacks itself. And it was like, well, why would your body attack itself? Like, why would it want to do that? You know, and it was such a simple question, but I was like, yeah, why wouldn't
it's
my body
also
want to
such a good
it?
One, you know, questioning the narrative of autoimmune diseases.
Exactly. And I had been told that I was a celiac, right? And I was like, oh my God, I've been gluten-free since I was 17. And, you know, so I'm sitting here with this guy who's like this health guy who's telling me in a very like innocent way, or he's asking me, he didn't even tell me. He just said, well, why? Why would your body, why would your body do that? And I had to, I like literally sat back and was like, that's a really good question. And I sat with that for a long time. I still sit with that because I think about, you know, the implication of, you know, autoimmune, you know, self-attack, like self-harm within the body. I'm someone with a background of eating disorders, like self-harm. Like, yeah, 101, I know that modality. Like I used to drink myself till I was under the table when I was a teenager. Like I used to put myself in really risky situations with men. Like I know what self-harm is, and this is another way of me doing that to myself. You know, like this is where I came to.
Just more
time.
Subtle and yeah, not
exactly.
As direct
and very, very subtle, right? Like energetically exactly the same but on a totally different level. And then I had to take responsibility for that. I was like, fuck, I'm doing this to myself, you know. And so the, again, the herbs like opened up that conversation within me in a way that like yoga and body work and all these things had sort of, I'd like met these parts of myself, you know. And I'm a very big believer in like a multidimensional approach to any kind of healing, because I just think we're multidimensional beings and very rarely is one thing the thing, you know. Like I just don't see that to be the case. But I just, for me, the herbs like put the puzzle pieces together in a way that I hadn't been able to do. Like I'd had little insight because, you know, I'd maybe had soy sauce once at a restaurant and I didn't get sick and I was like, oh, maybe I'm not a celiac, you know, but I didn't, you know, like I'd had those inklings, but I'd not ever like gone and eaten a loaf of bread because I was like, oh, I don't want to like put myself, you know, in that situation. And
yeah,
exactly. And so like those kinds of thought processes started to happen for me of like, and so I, you know, and again, this is the spleen energy, this is insight and intellect and like the ability to start to learn. I talk about it as being like, we're born with a curriculum, just like we go to school to learn something or to do a course, and not everyone gets it, right? Like some people, you're like, how are we in the same course and you don't understand any of this and I understand, you know, what I understand? Like it's, and I'm sure you've had that experience with like yoga trainings and stuff where there's one person that just doesn't get it and you're like, how? You know, and that, we've all been there. but that's like usually a sign that like for some reason, you know, this, like I would usually be like, well, what's going on with your spleen? Like, well, what's going on with like your Shen? Like, how do we get your heart and your intellect connected again and plugged into one another? You know, like what's that disconnect? And, you know, I, again, like I'm not going to go into my therapy here, but like I had to really look at lots of things from my, cause you know, spleen's around nurturance. How do we receive nurturance? How do we give nurturance? Do we overgive? Hello, yoga teachers. Like, I worked with a bunch of people who were chronic overgivers. Like my entire industry was like full of people that were like chronic overgivers. And I'm like, yeah, massive spleen deficiency, massive amount of energy lost in having no boundaries, having no energetic boundaries, like having shitty capacity to like know what's mine and what's yours, you know. And I think, you know, yoga and health really attract people like that because there's a sensitivity in us that's, you know, one of my teachers, you know, I think it's someone else's quote, but she says like, healer, heal thyself, you know, like before you go and try and tell anyone else how to heal, like do your own work. And
yeah,
I think that was such a big piece for me, was starting to be like, I can't keep, you know, perpetuating these behaviors and patterns and then expecting a different result. You know, it's just like that Einstein quote of like thinking you're going to get a different outcome with the same behavior that created the problem, you know? And so I was really having to look at, well, yeah, how do I learn to be boundaried? You know, so this was all spleen stuff that came up for me. And that was again a period of time and a lot to do with my daughter being born too. And, you know, and I want to be really clear, like I was able to eat gluten fairly quickly. Like I think within probably 6 months of Mason asking me that question, I was like, I'm going to try gluten and see what happens, you know? And you know, there was this whole journey around that for me. Cause it like opened, I was like, well, hang on, why do I demonize so many foods? Mm-hmm. Like I was raised, you know, in this really like health conscious kind of way. So it was like, everything was a bad food or a good food, or, you know? So I really had to unpick a lot of that. You know, it was like this whole cascade of things. But like the piece for me was, you know, understanding like the herbs gave energy to the parts of me that needed to like be met. And I was able to kind of meet them because I had the capacity, you know? And I think that's what so many people lack, is the actual energy to do this work, because, you know, you are busy and tired and, you know, on all the time. And that's the kind of like culture perpetuates that. I know it's no different in Europe. I know it's no different in America. Yeah, like America's almost worse than anywhere I've ever been, you know? And even like for me, even where I live, like moving from the city where I was, even though it was a fairly relaxed city to like where we live now, that was a massive change in energy for me. And my body and my nervous system were like, oh, thank God, like we needed that, you know? But I was so used to that heightened state of being, you know, even though I kind of knew in the back of my head it wasn't great for me, I was like, la, 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 I'm just going to keep going on my little like mouse wheel. So
I think it always, or like often for a lot of people, it takes some time to realize where we're at. And especially with our productivity driven culture, system, society that we're living in the West, it's like, to realize, to admit that, and then really look at ourselves and see where we are. Yeah, it takes honesty towards yourself. And as you said, it takes a lot of energy to work through that. And if you're depleted in the first place, I mean, it can be tricky, right? So
yeah, and I think something I've noticed, and like, you know, I don't want to paint a picture of like living this idyllic, never stressed life. That's not, but what I learned in that decade, especially, and through like pretty hard, you know, my 20s were filled with, I think I had like three pretty bad, I would call them like nervous breakdowns, like on the floor, complete mess, don't have any energy, calling an naturopath at like midnight. Oh, what do I do? You know, like I'm coming in tomorrow, help me. Like, you know, really depleted myself to the point of, you know, being quite unwell a few times. And I put myself in hospital when I was 18 because I was like drinking and partying so much and not, you know, I didn't even know I had a kidney infection, like stuff like that. Like I just, you know, I was not connected to my body person. So I want to be really clear on that. I've come a very long way. Like if anyone can do it, like if I can do it, anyone can do it. Because I was bulimic. I was like, if I ever have babies, I'm going to have drugs, you know? Like, I've had no drugs. I've had a free birth and a natural home birth. Like,
That's so amazing. Yeah, like, honestly.
I was kind of raised by, like, a really health-conscious mom, but it came with a lot of baggage, you know? And so my reaction to that was to go the other way and to, like, take all the drugs and party and, like, do all the things. And, you know, it kind of, again, then I had to swing back around and be like, well, no, that's not the answer. Like, what is? And then it was like, I'm going to work really hard and I'm going to, like, you know, buy a house when I'm 20, which I did. Like I did all this crazy shit. Now that I look back, I'm like, what was I even doing? You know, but I was on this like self-flagellation, you know, like the autoimmune, right? I'm like, I'm going to, you know, kill myself to prove that I'm valid. I don't, you know, I don't even know what the real And I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter what the story is, because what's happened through understanding that and then learning to be in my body and learning to work with like these medicines that are intelligent, like they're not, you know, like the pill, they're not this kind of pharmaceutical thing that's manufactured. You know, I believe they have an intelligence, but it's not the intelligence I want to be playing with. Like, it's a different
not
type
the
of
intelligence you
consciousness.
intelligence you want to feed yourself.
And it's like, that's a choice that we make to participate with that type of energetic exchange. And I'm not saying in every way that that stuff's bad, but I'm like, the less I have to do with that, the better in my experience. And, you know, the more I have to do with learning, I call it learning to shorten the pendulum swing. So for me, I was going really, really, really far in this direction. Then I was crashing and having to, like, you know, take a sleeping pill and like, and then I'd have to go, you know, then I'd go back over here and then I'd go back over here. And I'd just be freaking doing this
balancing
all the
out,
time.
Yeah, these extremes.
Exactly. So it's still yin and yang. We still move between periods of excess and periods of stillness. We still meet, you know, I'm not a sitter arounder really. Like, I'm not someone who's ever, you know, remember my acupuncturist is like, well, you're not going to sit in the corner and grow moss, are you? I was like, no, it's just not my personality, but I'm not going to kill myself for some stuff anymore either. Like, I've learned where the edges are. And so, you know, I wrote a course at the start of this year in my first trimester with two kids over an 8-week period. But I knew that I then needed to have a month of like absolute stillness, you know, very little work to just balance that out, you know. And I made a lot of things, a lot of decisions through that month of, or that 8 weeks, sorry, of like, you know, I'm not going to socialize. I'm not going to, like, you know, I really had to sit with like, how much capacity do I really have? And I really wanted to make that course because it was burning in me. I'd had the idea for years. It was like in me alive. And I wanted to birth it before I birthed this baby. Because I was like, I know if I have this baby, it's going to be another year because I know what it's like, you know, with little kids. And it's like, I'm just going to, and I had the creative life force and the drive to do it. But I could also feel like there was the temptation to just do it all night, like, which is something I'm really good at. You know, I'm the kind of person, like the first Superfeeds website I built, over, like, I stayed up till 4 in the morning, 3 nights in a row, and built the thing, you know. And
done.
Sam was like, yeah, he was like, well, okay, but like, are you all right? You know? I was like, it's done now, like, it's done. And I'm that kind of person. I'm just like, if something needs to be done, I'll get it done.
Okay, but now I get it, that you have to balance the extremes. Yeah, I get a good picture.
Well, and that's what I mean. Like, if I've had to learn this, like, and I'm really extreme, like, people that are just like, even a little bit less extreme than that, like, it's a big thing to learn. And, you know, I'm proud of the fact that I have the capacity to handle a lot. Like, it's something that I really like about myself, that I can handle very big things and I can handle a lot of stress, but I don't need to, you know. I can choose to actually only keep that as like a superpower for really stressful situations and like emergencies. And otherwise I can just balance myself through, you know, the other night, my little boy woke up in the middle of the night. I was having trouble getting back to sleep. And like in the past, and this has happened to me like years ago, 10 years ago, I would have gone into a mental spiral about it. I would have, you know, I've got to get up in the morning with the kids and I've got to do this and I've got to do that. And I'm going to be really exhausted. And I would have sat there and driven myself nuts. I got up, I made a cup of reishi. I like sat with my body, like really in my body. I was like, what do I need? I was like, all right, my feet are really cold, you know, I'm kind of in bed with the kids, so maybe I just need a little bit of space from that. So I just went and lay in my own bed and did like a yoga nidra, drank my reishi, and then I was like, I'm tired, and I went back to sleep, and like it was fine because I didn't let myself go into the drama of like the story of, oh well, I'm up at, you know, 2 in the morning and I have to get up
I
at
love
six
that,
with the
and that's so valuable because I know how it is waking up at night and yeah, you're
And look, it
watching the
happens.
clock and just pressuring yourself even more. And
And this is what we do. Like, we do this in so many ways. And this is a really relevant thing to like women. Like, we're so attuned to those energies, right? Like, if it's a full moon, there's a lot of yang energy in the atmosphere. And so, if you're feeling really alert and really on, that's because you're responding to the environment. There's actually nothing wrong with you. And what we would have done in a more traditional culture is we would have used the light in the evening to like probably dance and, you know, have a festival or do something. But you can also understand that if you're a female and you're bleeding on a full moon, you're going to have less yin in your body and less blood. And it's going to be really hard to go to sleep. Like that's a really common phenomenon, right? That the blood loss through menstruation means that there's going to be less yin substance because fluid is yin in Chinese medicine. So, and blood is especially yin, like it's very yin. So it's like we're losing, you know, so it's really common. Anything like a hot flush or something in your postpartum or, you know, like they're really common because again, we've lost a lot of yin through the birth process and the blood being lost. And so it's actually pretty normal to sort of be regulating the body to be regulating with bringing more yang, like, well, the yang's rising and we're trying to build more yin. So that's why we rest in our postpartum. Like, so these things are just very like cause and effect, like they're very logical. And so I see that with like people will be like, oh, you know, whenever I'm bleeding, I just can't sleep. And I'm like, yeah, well, you're probably not like you're probably tapping out your yin through your cycle. And then when you're bleeding, like you're extra depleted. So that Heshu Wu that I was talking about, that's a yin tonic.
Okay.
And like I needed that. Like I, you know, again, I don't really use I don't use that herb anymore because it's banned in Australia. It's a whole story. But I also like I bring yin in other ways, yoga nidra, yin yoga. You know, I was doing yin yoga, but I was probably doing it like maybe 2 or 3 times a week out of, you know, doing a whole shitload of vinyasa, bike riding, you know, swimming, high intensity, whatever it's called, like burpee kind of things, you know, I was doing a lot of yang and then a little bit of yin, you know? And so I've flipped that almost completely on its head. I do, if I ever do anything dynamic, it's like 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And then if I'm doing like my practice, it's usually very slow.
I think it's such a good advice for a lot of women here because I think often it's still this weight loss goal, which is okay. But we think, oh yeah, I'm gonna go for a run and or do some HIIT exercises or aerobics or whatever it is. And but actually we're depleting ourselves even more and our body is trying to hold on to whatever it has. So we're not losing weight and it's a very, very natural process. And
I want to just jump in here because I went to my first yin training with Paul Grilly in Thailand in 2013. And I rocked up, you know, I'd come off the back of the breakup and I was pretty like exhausted and like puffy. Like I'm not really one to get fat. I'm quite a long, lean person by nature, but I was feeling like I was carrying more weight than I usually did and just not feeling great in my body, right? Like I just felt heavy and tired and sad. And I left that training. I was cut. It looked like I'd been doing, I don't even know what you would do to get cut, like a bikini challenge or something. Like I was like so shredded. And it was, I literally did yin like 2 to 3 times a day. I did one Bikram class the entire time I was there, so 3 weeks. And I walked to get a massage most days during lunchtime. So in the entire time I was there, the entire cardiovascular activity. Oh, and I did one of Paul's, Paul does like a Qigong-y kind of style yang yoga practice. So I did one of those, one Bikram class, because I'd never done Bikram and it was free, and like walked to get a massage. In the entire time, I did nothing else. I didn't do a burpee. I didn't do anything. It was all yin. And I looked ridiculous. I got back and people were like you look like a supermodel, like what have you been doing, like, oh, you know, it was just, and I had a tan because it was Thailand and whatever, but like but it was crazy to me. And I was interviewing another yoga teacher the other day. She said the same thing. She was 10 kilos heavier. She did her yin training and it just dropped because her body was so stressed, was
Then you got the relaxation, the stress hormones dropped.
Chinese medicine's kidney, spleen hold water in the body. One of the things yin does for us is it shuts the brain off. Like there's no, you know, it's quiet. There's not much talking. There's not anything to do, especially if you're disciplined and you don't have your phone with you when you practice at home, you know, like it shuts off that process, and then the nervous system benefits, right? Like you're dropped in. So like to me, yoga nidra, yin, even restorative, like whatever those practices are that bring you into that place of stillness and trains, like the biggest thing for me is it trained my body to respond like in and from that place. I was able to access that place not being in my practice, and that took a little while, but that was the biggest gift for me with yin, was I was able to like be still and be in a yin state, and I still am. Like it's one of the best things about that practice for me while I'm in my daily life. So you know, I think meditation and things help with this too, but the embodiment of yin, because it's very visceral and you're in a physical shape and you have to feel like the sensation of that and learn to sort of be with it. You can't, if you push it away, it's very uncomfortable, as many people will know. And if you like try to ignore it or kind of, you know, mentally, la 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 la, it doesn't work. So there's like really, you learn to meet it. You learn to meet the discomfort. You learn to meet yourself. And so that process for me has been really transformational, because it, you know, again, over, so I would probably have been seriously, I practiced in a bit before I trained with Paul, but like seriously practicing it since 2013. And I would say like more devoted to it as an art, you know, probably since like 2014, 15. I like it's such a, it's been such a gift to me, because, you know, I'm still challenged by it. I'm, like I said, I'm not a naturally still person, and I come to like as me and I'm like, ah, and then I have to meet, like I have to, you know, meet myself there. And then, but I often describe it as diving underneath a wave, and I know not everyone's, you know, spent a lot of time in the ocean, but where I'm from, it's very like we live in the ocean, and like you're at the top and the waves are bashing you, and it's very scary and very uncomfortable. And then you go underneath and it's like none of that shit up there's happening. Like it's like there's not even like all of that craziness at the surface is not there anymore. You're in this completely calm, quiet, supported, slowing. Like the ground is there. Yeah. And it's like all of that can still be happening. Like it's not going to stop. It's the ocean, but you're okay because you're down here, like, you know, kind of in it, but not in it, you know? And that's been my experience of like, of living yin and bringing more of that into my life, I guess. It's just, you know, having, and yeah, I still love a good, like I love a good vinyasa class. Every now and then I'll go do an Ashtanga class. Like I love a good primary series practice. Like I'm not trying to say never do fun stuff and never do hard stuff, and you know, but I really noticed it after my second child. Like I was doing a lot of asana and a lot of, so that when I was talking about that victim-y kind of period I had, I was like really, really, so I had my first period with him. I didn't get my second one, and then I had a really victim-y one, and in that time I'd started doing a lot of like what I consider quite fun exercise, like high intensity, like, you know, cardio-y kind of, or strength-y, you know, that kind of stuff. Like I enjoy it. I really do. It's fun. My brain likes it. But I noticed my body, I was getting really adrenalized. I was feeling like my sleep was affected. And then I was feeling like more exhausted. And then I started to feel more anxious and more depleted. And then I didn't get my period. And then the next time I got my period, when I sort of slowed everything, I started to back off when I didn't get my period. I suspected something was going on, like with, in terms of using too much of my blood and my yin. And then my second period, I was really like me about everything. I was like, oh, this is like, you know, this is me pushing, even though it's something I like, it's pushing myself past, like I'm not listening to what I need at this point. And so that was, you know, that was a great reminder of the stuff that I teach, which is like, you know, like you don't always want to hear, you know, what's true, unfortunately. And, you know this from like, I know you've trained the practice, and it's like a kapha person does not want to do a pitta movement. Like they don't want anything to do with that shit. They want to lie down and like lounge around and have a great life. No, but they need a little bit of,
we're always,
you know, pitta people don't want to stop.
We're always attracted to what we like, right? But we have to listen to what we need. And I think these words were just like these, like perfect closing words for our first chapter of this conversation. And it's such a good reminder for any woman listening, you know, slow down. I think it's a general advice you can give to women out there, probably to men as well. But because we're in this, can you say oversped, like overly speedy society. So yeah, I think a lot of problems can be fixed by slowing down. And
yeah, and like you said, like the, you know, knowing what the thing that you probably don't want to do, like,
is what you need.
That's kind of, yeah, the medicine is in like the opposite of what your tendencies probably are. And that, you know, again, that's a very general statement, but I've found it to be almost universally true, and it is applicable to men too. And I, you know, I know that's not really what we're talking about right now, but like, yeah, I see it in men as well. And many men I've spoken to, you know, I run 40 kilometers every like second day, and I do this and I do that, and I'm a vegan, and why do I have cracks on my heels, and I'm bald, and like, you've got nothing left. Like, you're using everything you have to you know, do this incredible feats of human achievement, yes, but you know, at what cost? And I'm, you know, I do want to say, like, life is to be lived, and I don't believe we should just like sit in the corner and grow moss. Like, I don't think that's the solution. But I, like I said, I think it's just about this pendulum. Like, every person needs to know what their like edge is, and when, like, how, you know, can I come back from this? Like, and that was for me the big thing. Like, all right, I know I can do a big 8-week push, but then I need to have like a 4-week chill, you know? And then I'm doing it at the moment. I'm in a bit of a push, and then I'm like, you know, end of July, I'm out, you know, I'm going to go spend 2 months preparing to have a baby. Like, and so that's kind of how I've learned, you know, and maybe talk to me in 20 might be different, but that's how I've learned to navigate this stuff. And so now I don't need to go and die and call a naturopath and cry. And, you know, I don't need to do any of that stuff. I have a rest, you know, I have a nap, or I, you know, go to the beach for a couple of days and like get in nature, or, you know, whatever, like I eat good food, like, you know, it doesn't take me much to kind of recalibrate anymore.
Yeah. I think that's how it should be, actually. You don't have to book a spa weekend, but balance your life in a way that you can get it. Maybe, well, that's an exaggeration maybe, but just as you said, you're having a cup of reishi. Maybe that can be your spa moment that like completely re-nourishes, replenishes you in that moment. And because everything else is quite in balance. And yeah.
When the things that remind you, like, that's what, for me, part of what reishi does for me is reminds me of my value system, and like my, you know, it's part of that like recognition of I'm doing, you know, you've helped me understand this, and I'm coming back to you as a reminder that I know this, kind of like my practice. And I'm sure you have a similar relationship with yoga. It's like, you don't ever stop practicing yoga. It's not like you suddenly are yoga. Like it's this constant meeting. You meet yoga every time you practice, and you meet yourself through that practice in a different way. And it's, so it's like, I, you know, reishi is, you know, I'm not a massive fan of this whole self-care thing, but like, it is that for me. It's like, it's a reminder of what I'm choosing to embody in this lifetime. And she helped teach me that, and she's helping me to remember that as I go through, you know, my life. And, you know, yes, great, she's a liver tonic and an immune tonic and a heart tonic and all this stuff, but like, it's that actual responsibility of like, oh, thank you for reminding me. I know this, like, I'm going to come back to, like, that's the bit. And I, that's how I use practitioners. Like, that's how I use yoga teachers even now. Like, it's like, remind me of what I know so that I can remember better, you know, and then like, let me try and integrate this for as long as possible before I come back and like, you know, try and, like, I had an acupuncturist who used to say, like, at the beginning, come and see me every 2 weeks, but I want, like, I'd like you to not have to see me every 2 weeks for a while, you know, like, and then let's see how that goes. And I would go for 4 weeks, and I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm feeling pretty out of balance, but like, I can feel how I put myself out of balance, so I can feel, you know. And I'd spent 2 years seeing this guy, and that was a massive process for me of learning to not rely on a practitioner to put me back to peace, you know, put me back together. And So those are the things that I've found really helpful. And so Reishi for me has been like a teacher in that way. And yeah, and was the first experience I had of working with a herb in that way. Prior to that, I'd always approached it naturopathically or even in a Chinese medicine way as like a fixing a problem, with very little, actually I'm quite ashamed to say, very little regard for the plant, even though I've made tinctures and like worked with herbs and gardened, and like I never really thought of the plant as having, you know, a spirit or an essence, really. Like I thought about plant medicines being like that, but not generally plants, you know. And Reishi again, like that was a big teaching for me, was like, whoa, like trees, flowers, plant, like it's not just the ones we eat, but like they all have you know, like dirt, but like that, you know, again, that was like a bit of a journey for me of like, whoa, I'm actually completely disconnected from this entire kingdom that is here communicating with me. And Taoism was a big part of that for me as well, because we do a lot of work with nature. And if I'm organized, I do have a post series coming up on that, like why does being near the ocean feel so good? Well, because it's like really good quality chi, you know, and it's like because water holds a certain consciousness, and because water communicates with us and wants to support us, and we are water, and like, you know, salt water in us, and like, so there's this whole, you know, trees want to help us, they're like kin to us. And but you know, we don't really have that, like the Celts had that, and you know, I'm sure like your traditional, I don't, are you sort of Viking-y or like from that, you know, your ancestry?
Probably. I'm not even
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, well, I have a Danish ancestor, but I often think like before we had Christianity and before we had, you know, we would have had a very nature-based connection to the land and to the, in you know, endemic species of the region. And like, you know, the Celts are probably the European tradition I understand the most in terms of this. And, you know, trees were people to them. Like every single one of them had a different personality and a different, like, they had a different relationship with them. They used them for different things, and they were, you know, in relationship to them. And so that, you know, the fact that we don't even consider that, like we can have a tree and just like chop it down, don't even think about it again, like very different,
brutal,
relationship.
So, well, thank you for all of this until now, I have to say.
<They're welcome. laughs>
that was so beautiful, the last part, what you said. I mean, it was all beautiful, but especially, you know, talking about this connection and the spirit of the plants. And I really see it as an invitation to, I mean, if you're listening now, have a look at the Superfeast website. There are many, many articles as well. They have a blog. So read through them. Read through the different mushrooms or the various mushrooms, the tonic herbs, and also take into account what Tani told us here about women's health, and then see what feels right, I would say. I mean, using the actual knowledge, but also bring in your intuition and see what feels right. Try it out, maybe order something, maybe order the reishi and see how it helps you, how it helps you remind yourself, remember yourself. So thank you.
Well, and on your question you asked earlier, I like women in general, like so that spleen, kidney and liver triad, like we designed the I Am Gaia or the women's blend to speak to that. So the whole purpose of why we put that together was my husband and I'd been through postpartum with my daughter, and I was kind of like, I'm using like these herbs kind of in combination, and it would be great just to have something I could chuck in a drink that wasn't like, you know, four different packets kind of get out in the morning with a toddler or whatever. Like it was, you know, it's kind of just really came out of necessity. And we joke about it being like a herbal multivitamin. And so the thing I want to say with women, and this is another like, ugh, sometimes for women, but you can take 100 days to really shift a woman's cycle. And the reason is that we're kind of often operating like from, you know, not from behind the eight ball, but we're kind of like the rebuilding and the way in which blood is made in the body and the way in which resources are distributed in the body. Like we often, if we're depleted, we need to give ourselves at least a couple of months to really see like the benefit of, especially I find with things like herbs, or even like if you're going to take liver capsules or something like that, like it can take a little while to see the shifts, because the body has to kind of come back from often below baseline to then a place of regulation. So I usually say, like, give it 100 days. And that's actually unrelated, is a Taoist practice of doing a herb for 100, like kind of fasting on a herb or using a herb for 100 days. But I actually didn't learn that from, I mean, I did learn that from the Taoist tradition, but I also learned from the Western tradition that there's this kind of roughly 3-month cycle that that women's bodies go through in terms of especially healing menstrual and kind of common like menstrual issues. Again, there's really complex menstrual stuff like endo and, you know, I want to PCOS, and they're really complex patterns and they're very individual. So as a general rule, like stuff like that, I'd probably go and see a good practitioner if you're newer to this world, because you're going to want to start to understand, you know, and a good acupuncturist who specializes in women's health should be able to help you out with that. But then from like a more general, like, I just don't want to feel like cranky. I don't want bad skin when I'm bleeding. I don't want, you know, that feeling of heaviness and whatever other, you know, I think PMS, like bloating, frustration, like all of that sort of stuff. That, like, the I Am Gaia, or if it's in America, the women's blend. Like I said, the name may change because we are in the middle of a thing with that. But, you know, something like that, it's like one product. If you got probably like either there's a two sizes of, yeah, it's like a really small usual trial size product, and then there's like 100 grams and then a bigger bag, like you go between 100 gram or 250, and one of those is like, that's going to be enough to give you a sense of whether that's going to work for you. Some people need a little bit more support on the Jing side of things, especially if there is this kind of chronic over, you know, like kidney depletion and kind of like real overdoing thing. And again, you kind of know, like, I love that you said intuition, because we're very big on, you know, like that question Mason asked me, like, well, why would your body attack itself? Like, starting to get the person to think, well, you know, what is really at the root of, you know, is it that I'm really exhausted and I need more nourishment and support and like rest? Or is it actually like, I do have a really bad food allergy and I need support to take that out of my diet? You know, like you'll know. And I think that's the thing with a lot of us, is we do start to have an intuition or a knowing once we've worked on cultivating that trust in the body for a little while. So yeah, I'd probably start with I Am Gaia or Jing. Jing is really popular with women, we find, because they are a lot of the time coming back from pretty severe adrenal depletion. And just on the, like, and that's, so that would have, that's like what the Heshu Wu was doing for me. It was restoring me enough that I could actually have the energy to sort of start to do the processing and, you know, the healing, that kind of thing. And so I take Jing now instead of Heshu Wu. We originally had Jing in the Heshu Wu. Mace has replaced it with other Yin Jing herbs that are just as effective. So that's kind of what I would personally say, is to start with one of those. So the Jing or the I Am Gaia. And again, Jing is like really exhausted, need to like sort out my depletion first, whereas I would say the guy is a little bit more like just kind of really frustrated with these kind of chronic menstrual issues, not really any, you know, I wouldn't say I'm completely exhausted, completely tapped out. I'm just like, I don't know why this is happening to me. It doesn't seem, you know, I'm pretty healthy, I'm living pretty well. Like, that would be more of an I Am Gaia kind of situation to me, because that's just going to bring those main organs into harmony and start to bring that balance into the system and create that flow and clear out that stagnation stuff. So that's kind of how I would break it down for women in general. Like, again, you can, and people are so welcome to reach out to me on my personal Instagram. I'm happy to reply. I'm pretty, you know, usually pretty good at replying to DMs, but I really enjoy, like I said, like that people trust us and give us like their questions. And, you know, it's taught me so much about the body and opened up so much for my education, because when I go and study with practitioners or work with acupuncturists or a mentor, I'm able to like, well, I've heard of this thing happening, how do, you know, how would we work on that, or how would we treat that, or what's the pattern, like why is that happening to this person? And, you know, you were saying that yourself at the beginning, like, are these things coming up for me because it's the season, or is it because, like, you know, if something else that's going on? And there are so many things like that, but a lot of the time especially in the West, like I think because of our lifestyles, we're, so many of us are so detached even from what's going on in the seasons that it's like, it's actually just like come back to the real basics first. Like, are you getting enough rest? Are you getting enough food? Are you getting enough water? You know, are you over exercising? You know, are you, you know, all of those kinds of really obvious things. But I think for a lot of people, you know, they, it's easy to forget how simple health can be. Like, and that's, to me, the herbs just like remind, like I said, they're just reminders. They bring us back to like, oh, that's what it feels. You know, when I have a reishi in the middle of the night, I'm like, oh, I feel really calm and quiet again. And I remember what it's like to not be like overthinking and, you know, worried about waking up and all this stuff. And so I'm able to sort of embody that and, you know, take that into bed. And so that's kind of what I feel like. Yeah. So if I was going to say, you know, exhaustion jing, more of just a general women's health, the Gaia blend. And then, you know, for sure, if you're really drawn to a single herb, and I, that's how I personally work with the herbs a lot these days, is like, I just wait for them to call me. I'm like, oh, sugar. And, you know, the other day I said to him, I said, we don't have any sugar at home. And, you know, he brought some home that night. And I was just like, I've really craved this. And I've had that happen actually in all of my pregnancies around the second trimester. I'm not quite sure why. Like, there's no real logical reason for that to me, but it's been something that's happened every time. So I lean into that and I take a lot of shaga through until I don't want it anymore. And then I'm sort of, you know, go back to maybe reishi or whatever else I was taking. So, and I found once you've taken the herbs for a couple, like I usually say with everything, like, you know, a kind of moon cycle, like 28 days a month, like give yourself enough time to really experience, especially as women, like what is the energetic experience of this herb through like a cycle? Like, how do I feel? Like, and give it enough time to really like meet you and for you to meet it, especially if you are really busy. And then, you know, I'm like that, you know, once you've tried a few of them and had that experience, you can start, you'll start to notice, oh yeah, like that, you know, for me, shaga's got this kind of grounding and like deeply cellularly nourishing kind of feeling. And so it's like, that makes sense to me that I would crave that in pregnancy at some point, because like that's what's going on for me. It's like, you know, come back, nourish, mineralize, like really raw, like really rich, you know, feels like almost like compost, like really nourishing the soil of my body. Whereas reishi, like I said, has more of a like calming and sort of spiritual experience for me. So yeah, you'll start to get a relationship with them. And then, and not every herb is for everybody. I want to be really clear on that. Like, there are herbs, you know, I've literally never taken, I've tasted neural nectar, but I've never taken it. It's just not something I'm interested in working with.
Yeah.
It's, you know, a combination of really powerful brain tonic herbs, which my partner designed because of his mother and her aneurysm, and like to keep the blood flow moving to the brain. And I think it's incredibly important. We have people that like rave about it. They think it's like the best thing that ever happened to them. But for me, I just have a really strong no to that product, you know,
yeah.
So I don't pick it, even though.
It's interesting because I tried the neural nectar and I didn't feel it really strongly. So
yeah.
I guess it's a lot about trying the things, how they speak to you. Because, for example, I have some experience with rhodiola and ashwagandha, and I would say for me personally, I felt the rhodiola stronger, and they have a similar, in some regards, effect on the body. And it was interesting for me to see how my body responds to them differently. So where I would say, yes, definitely in a stressful time, I could, or if I see a stressful time coming up, I could prep myself with some rhodiola, and I've done that. I don't know. I'm not sure about the ashwagandha effect yet. So it's really a trying
ashwagandha
out.
For me feels more yin. So I use it as a rebuilding tonic. Like I really don't understand, you know, and I go against the herbal grain with this, because a lot of people use it as a kind of like you're describing rhodiola, like a preventative stress tonic, but I see it as almost a restorer, like a bringing. And I mean, look, it's a rasayana, right? So it's about restoring the ojas and re-nourishing the system. And so I love it postpartum. Like, it is one of those like ride and die herbs for me postpartum. Give it to my daughter after like big times with her, like school, or you know, like I often give it to her in the holidays when I want to like just really nourish her and support her. But I, rhodiola to me is a way, like more of a, yeah, like insulating you against stress. And I feel like it's a little bit more, I find it more of a yang energy. Like it's got a little bit more juice to it to me, a bit more substance, a bit more structure. And so I don't like, I actually am not a, again, not a massive fan of rhodiola. It's not ever sat super well in my body, but I remember the feeling of it being very strong and very sturdy.
Interesting. In terms of its,
whereas to me, ashwagandha has a lot more of a, you know, I don't think I can call it a yin herb because I don't know if that's completely, it's more of an Ayurvedic herb. And we brought it in, you know, again, just because we both really like it and we wanted to have it in the range, not really for any other reason. But I, yeah, like, and I respect that Ayurveda and Chinese medicine don't really see, you know, I guess they see herbs in a similar way, but not the same. So I try not to say yin and yang, but it's, I often reference the feeling of ashwagandha as a more yin nourishing building kind of herb. I wouldn't, like, I personally wouldn't use it as a, yeah, it's not something I would, like, I would want to take to, like, you know, if I knew I was having a really stressful time, I'd probably use it more as a restoring, like, that's how I think about it. I reach for it, like, say, when I'm in my busy phase, I use more yang herbs, and then when I'm in my 4-week rest, I'm using my yin herbs to rebuild and nourish myself.
So ashwagandha then in the rebuilding phase, and then in the yang phase, just as a,
yeah, I would use our Jing formula, but you could use like rhodiola, or you could use you know, like,
good.
That's kind of, again, that's just my, how my body works and feels good with using those herbs, and like how I find a lot of the time. And again, this is kind of the problem with how Western medicine, and this is what I really struggled with when I was studying Western Chinese herbs. I was like, whoa, they don't really talk to each other. Like Western medicine's saying it's an adaptogen. They're all adaptogens. They're all good for stress. And it's like, well, they are, but it's not, they don't do the same thing for stress. And stress has so many different forms. And what
causes,
even is,
right? Root causes, looking at the root causes is,
and like, what type of stress is it? Is it really intense physical stress? Is it like emotional stress? You know, I know that the body has like its chemical pathways, but it's different. Like if I'm going to do something really physically challenging versus something emotionally challenging, I have a very different response in my body, and the rebound from that, or the like the net effect of that is very different. Like, and so those two things for me require a really different herbal approach. Like I'm not, you know, I'm not reaching for the same herbs to support those two different experiences. So I find that the Western, you know, and we struggle with this a lot because we sell tonic herbs, which technically the Western kind of system wants to call adaptogens. And, you know, yes, that's valid, and they are in the Western model adaptogens, but where they came from and how they were discovered and the people who worked with them first and who got to know them and, you know, again, like I believe spoke to them and were spoken to by them and like had a right relationship with them. They weren't just like, oh, this has lots of great stress supporting chemicals in them. You know, they were like, wow, this plant has something to offer us as humans. Like it offers humanity something. You know, and I feel like that's a very different way to meet a herb than it is to like call it an adaptogen and say it's good for stress. And so, you know, I kind of struggle a little bit with that that model. And we, you know, it's something we bump up against all the time because even our herbal regulation system in Australia wants to say certain things about what herbs can and can't do because of the Western mind, you know, and how we categorize things. And so, you know,
another,
I think
way of compartmentalizing things, which speaks,
yeah, which
a lot.
Is, you know, both are valid. I don't want to discount adaptogens. Like I'm not saying that research isn't valid, and I don't, but it's just not how I've come to relate. You know, I remember being really into that when I first, you know, probably again like 10, 12 years ago, like reading all the books on adaptogens and, you know, having a pantry, like, you know, similar rhodiola and ashwagandha, like having like that disgusting tasting powder of ashwagandha, like that I used to try and put in smoothies and be like, kind of first hearing about reishi as an adaptogen. And, I'm trying to remember what other, I just had, a little pantry of like disgusting herbs. Many of them were very disgusting that I'd read about from a naturopathic background of like being, adaptogenic and supporting stress and thinking, well, I'm stressed, I'm going to take my adaptogens, And I don't know, like it probably helped to some degree, but I didn't feel them how I feel herbs now. And I didn't perceive that, kind of, and I mean, that was for me just like I said, reishi just changed everything for me because I was like, whoa, I've been completely, like I've been using plants to fix my problems, but not really like relating to them, just been like, I'm going to take my little alcoholic drops, like a tincture, and I'm going to feel better, but not really thinking about, well, what is, what are these herbs that I'm taking? What are they like? What is their energetic resonance? What are they doing in my body? And I don't think I give my kids, like a cough tincture thing, and they love it, and it's got thyme in it. And I, again, I've made tinctures with thyme and I've worked with thyme. And so I kind of feel good about like, it's got these little flowers that look like little bronchioles of the lungs, and it's this beautiful tonic for coughs. And so I kind of have this relationship with thyme that I'm comfortable enough to use like a pretty commercial product. When my kids are sick, they have some of that and they like the taste of it. It's easy to get into them. Like, I'm still using herbs in that way. I'm not saying we all have to be woo about everything, but I think if you can really start to think about, well, it's kind of like when we source food, like you can just eat food and that's fine as well. But then, sometimes you have something and someone grew it and it's like, you can kind of taste the sun and you can taste like the soil and you're like, whoa, this actually like, this does something to me when I eat this that is not just food, and many of us have had that experience on farms or with people who grow their own food or farmers markets even, or, and again, I know like Europe has a beautiful culture of tradition of like really honoring food. And I think it's kind of that same energy of like someone grew this, the sun shone on it, the soil, nourished it, like the wind blew it and the elements participated in the creation of this thing. And so can at least a little bit, we honor that when we imbibe it and when we take its medicine. So that's kind of the,
I love that. I love that aspect that you're bringing in, like in this whole conversation of building the connection to the herbs and honoring what they truly are. They are not just these things to fix in an easy or fast way, but they bring so much more, and they might even invite you to look at something or to open up on a higher level. So that's really, really beautiful. And I think we need more of that in our society, because there is still such an urge to get easy fixes or to just consume things but not really treasure them for what they are. And I think it ties perfectly into your philosophy, the philosophy of Superfeast, of how you harvest the things, of how you source the things, and that they're not some mass production without the true chi or prana in it, but that they still contain the essence.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, for us where, like Western medicine can meet us like in the fix it, like the solve the immediate symptom problem. But I think a lot of healing is in relationship, and it's in relationship to one another in community. I think it's in relationship to our bodies and, and then like how we relate to the things in which we engage with in life. And, the Taoist lens is very much about relationship. It's about, everything is constantly affecting and influencing the expression of everything else. And so I think the herbs just are, they're a part of that. And I don't, I can't separate that, because that's become like my worldview really, is like what I do impacts everyone and vice versa. And like to take responsibility for that, like on an energetic level, as well as mentally and physically, like, yeah. And there's a lot of, I think that's a big thing to talk about, and it's not easy to meet that sometimes, because it means we have to be quite responsible for ourselves. And but that's kind of, I think the path that I've ended up walking has led me to that awareness. And that's kind of this business for me has been a really big manifestation of our mutual growth in that way, because we've both, you know, we've sort of walked that path together but separately. And it's been really interesting to me how we came to the herbs from different places, like Mason very much from health potentiation. Like, he wasn't really ever unwell, but he was like, you know, he had a couple of really minor things, but he was like, I just want to be like a superhero. And the herbs do that. And I was, you know, coming more from like, well, I want to fix me. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not where I want to be, like physically and mentally and emotionally. And but we've kind of both, it's almost led us both through to like radical self-responsibility and radical like realization of relationship, and not just with each other, but with everything. And the business is a reflection of that as well. And, you know, it's constantly changing. We kind of laugh about it all the time. Like, you know, how do you grow a business with that? You know, like how do we even, you know, we don't know. Like, we're just working it out as we go. And I think there'll be a limit to what Superfeast can do. But then I'm also like, what it's seeded, you know, even just conversations like this that someone listens to, even if they never buy a herb, like, I hope that on some level they take a piece of like the wisdom of the herbs into their lives. Like, that's almost enough. Like, you don't need, like, maybe it's not about selling a jar of extracted herbs. It's just about like what they're here to teach us, you know. And that's kind of, I think, what we both feel is like, we don't know if it's the business or if we'll both go in other directions with like selling, you know, will we sell herbs forever? I don't know. I think probably like that business will live with us for a very long time, because we both see it as a legacy business. We want our, you know, our children are both very connected to the growth of that business, like, as in they've been such a part of it. But yeah, I'm also like, I just think it's like the gift of the insight through what it's given us. Is like, kind of like, I don't really care about, you know, like what happens, you know, like it's not about, yeah. Anyway, it's an interesting one, and I don't really know what the future is, but like we don't plan to stop, of course. Yeah. Like, we love what we do, but yeah, we often sort of reflect on, well, we've changed so much in the last decade, and it's been through this business and through the herbs and through our practices. And so like, imagining another decade, like, I can't even conceive of what that looks like. So yeah, I'm just kind of excited for the journey, really, and grateful for the support. Like, we, you know, we have a beautiful community of people around us and a beautiful product, like, that I'm really proud of. So it's easy to continue to be proud of what we do. You know, it's, I've never had a moment of being like, oh, I wish we didn't do this. You know, if, you know, there's definitely times I've been like, oh my God, why did we do this? But not about, like, you know, more about the legal stuff and the, you know, technical, you know, the moving things around, of course, and all that stuff. Yeah, but
that's pretty amazing when you, I think it's a really beautiful journey, you know, to grow your business, and you feel that you're growing with it actually, and that you have this space to expand and to evolve.
Yeah, we always call it the dojo, like, and that's the kind of martial arts term for like the place where the practice happens, you know. And I think yeah, it's, you know, it's definitely not easy, and anyone who's had a practice will know, like, there are days when it's like, you know, swimming through mud, and there are days when it's like, why, you know, this is so easy, why don't I do this all the time, you know. It's just, it's constantly like that. And and yeah, like, but I think that's the thing, like, the Mason especially has like a very karmic bond to Superfeast, in terms of like, it was very much like his, you know, I birthed our children, but I, like, he birthed that business and kind of conceived it when everyone thought he was completely nuts, and like, was very brave to like pursue what, you know, seemed like a ridiculous idea. Like, I still think sometimes, like, I remember being like, I'm gonna have this guy come to the studio and he's gonna talk about mushrooms, and people are like, what? I'm like, you know, like, they're like tonic herbs. Everyone's just like, I don't know what you're on, but I was like, that's a really good idea, isn't it? Like, people just did not think so, you know. And I think that's just kind of like, yeah, that I was naive enough to be like, surely people want to hear about this. And he was naive enough to start a company. Like, I'm just like, wow, that's crazy. So yeah, here we are. But yeah, I'm super grateful. Like, there's been so many like cultural shifts, and like the zeitgeist of, I think, like just collective consciousness has changed so much in the last decade, and like how we relate to health, and like that I can even have this conversation with you tonight. Like, that wouldn't have been the dialogue like 10 years ago. And I remember like trying to run these development courses in my studio and like trying to talk about this stuff like without as much insight as I have now, like just with an inkling of like that this is important, that we start to like examine ourselves on multiple levels. And you know, they were popular, but it was like there wasn't, I think now there's just so much consciousness around like how powerful we are as beings and creator beings, and like that, you know, there's so much juice in like being self-aware and starting to cultivate that, and how that contributes on a much bigger level as well. So yeah, it feels like a really nice time for like all of that insight from Superfeast to sort of come out as well, because that sort of feels like where we're both at, where we're both like moved through a lot of like stuff in the last decade. And yeah, like I feel it, we feel a lot more grounded, a lot more like clear, I guess, on our personal trajectories as well. So yeah, it's a really nice nice time to be a human, I think.
Definitely.
Even though challenging in many ways.
Exciting times. Well, thank you so much for everything. Looking at the time, because we've chatted
I have
for almost
to put to bed.
2 hours. Exactly. Yeah. It's late for you. So for the listeners, you are in Australia, I'm in Europe. So we're dealing with this 8 hour time difference. So maybe we'll come back to a second conversation for our topic of seasons, going through the seasons, because
we did not go there at all.
But it's good. I love this, how it unfolded naturally. So
trust the flow person. So
exactly. And I'm sure that the topic we talked about today will be super, super interesting for so many women. And also, what I wanted to say is it was super helpful to have the rundown through the individual herbs towards the end of our conversation. So I will list them in the show notes and I'll put a little link. I'm also in your affiliate program, so here's a little disclaimer. That's okay.
That's great. We love that we get to support small, like independent creators too. And I was talking to someone about this the other day. Like, it's such a gift to be able to, like, I remember one of these single moms that was like one of our first affiliates, and she made like, I think it was like $4,000 from us 1 month. And I was like, that is so incredible that we get to give her money. And like, you know, she had no job and she was on like in Australia, like a pension, and felt really good, you know, to be like, we're supporting other people through this business, not just, you know, it's not just ourselves. And anyway, it was, And so I still, that affiliate program, you know, that was something Mason really wanted to have. He was like, I'm just so grateful for the word of mouth. We have like, we don't have marketing budgets. Like, you know, I've got a friend
I
in
think
marketing.
Word of mouth is so important.
Especially
for all the little companies, the self-employed people, self-employed yoga teachers, whoever.
No, but we're so grateful because those, like the reviews, the people that, and just for us, like, you know, I don't want to sound like it's an ego thing, but just to know that we have impact and that it works, like we know it works, but sometimes you get in this little like echo chamber of like, oh, maybe it's just us and our friends, you know, like maybe it doesn't work. And then someone will be like, you know, Mason called me only a couple of months ago. He called me in the middle of the day, like just stoked because someone had sent our customer service this really long email about all of the ways in which Superfeast had changed her life. And he was like, this is why I do this, you know? And it's like, you know, this is for him like 13 years in or something or whatever we're up to, like 2011 to now. And he's still like moved to call his wife in the middle of the day because of an email someone sent to customer service.
That's amazing.
That's the stuff. Yeah, and it's just like, you know, I remember crying, you know, we've cried, we've laughed, you know, we've been through all the emotions with all of these people's stories because it's, yeah, it's really special. I know people sometimes get funny with affiliates, but it's like, for me, like, it's people like yourself who've genuinely used the product. Like, we don't, you know, like, it's people don't, it doesn't work if they're not actual advocates for the product and the brand. We've just seen that there's just not an energetic resonance. It doesn't happen. So I think it's a great way for people to support you. If people are listening to this podcast, yeah, you know, you get a lot of value out of these. You know, I've done a podcast, a couple now, and it's like it's a lot of time and energy goes into it, and it's a great way to to contribute back to the people.
Thank you.
Putting all the effort into, thank you, Kat, and thank you for having me tonight. It's been it's been such a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you so much for listening. I really hope that you enjoyed this conversation, that you got some good insights out of it, some food for thought, and also taking the space to listen to something like that can be a form of nurturance, of restoring your body, your mind, because you're taking that time to listen to something that can eventually nurture you. And overall, I just find it so beautiful and powerful to tune into this ancient wisdom that various ancient sciences give us, that what they embody, what they have been telling for thousands of years, and it's still so valid. So again, thank you, Tani, for sharing all your wisdom, your experiences. And you guys listening, if you want to do me a little favor, please leave a 5-star rating if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. Also write a short review. Can only be a sentence, that helps me immensely to grow my show. And of course, feel free to send an email with any feedback, comments, or leave us a comment over on Instagram. All right, guys, have a good time, take care, and hear you soon.